Forensic Forecast is brought to you by Digital Forensics Magazine at digitalforensicsmagazine.com and by Disc Labs. Find out more about our services at disclabs.com. Hello, welcome to Forensic Forecast. This week, we've got two very special guests on the show. We have Brian Carney from Access Data and Lee Reber, who also from Access Data. So, Brian, do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at the company and whatnot?
Thank you. Excited to be on the show for the first time. I'm Brian Carney, President and COO of Access Data. I oversee the development of our software products, training, and our professional services organization. And I'm excited to cover a couple different topics today.
Excellent. And I am Lee Reber. I am the Director of Mobile Forensics for Access Data. I handle overseeing the MPE Plus, or Mobile Phone Examiner Plus, as well as the training offerings for Access Data, in particular for the mobile phone forensics.
Fantastic. So, a couple of weeks ago, we had the guys from Guidance on the show, and they were talking to us about the upcoming features of NK7. And so now, we thought, well, we'll give the Access Data guys a turn to come on and let us know all the exciting stuff which they have coming up too. And I believe there's, well, one of them, I think two of the products are already here with us. One of them is coming sometime in the future. So if we talk about, first of all, Access Data Triage, what can you tell us about that, Brian?
Yeah, no, that's exciting. We just released the first version of our AD Triage product. It was written from the ground up, leveraging a number of the sort of key, I guess you would say, modules, components that many of the other Access Data products are built on. On top of leveraging FTK and the Imgur technology, it is. There's a couple things that I think are really worthwhile about bringing up for it. One, it is has a dead box capability and a live box capability, and I'll go into that. But from a dead box perspective, it's got a WinPE environment that you can boot into. We provide an ISO to do CD for machines that aren't USB bootable. Or you boot off the USB, and so it has full dead box capability and also has live capability for Windows systems in which that you can grab volatile data and static data at the same time. But a couple different things that I think are worth bringing up as far as what we've done a little bit unique with it. One, it doesn't require the dongle itself. The licensing control is not you don't have to actually have that to perform the triage. So you don't have to use one of our USBs that we provide. You can just use any USB. We've got, you know, a list of recommended ones that we've, you know, tested with that, you know, seem to boot consistently. But you can program pretty much any USB device to do the triage with. So you're not locked into a dongle in case you're out in the field, you lose it. You're out of luck, and it also doesn't require proprietary USB. So pretty excited about those features. But we've done some things where you basically can, if the console is really easy to use, you can pre-program with these profiles where you'll build these templates and these profiles, both for, like I said, dead box type of artifacts, file system stuff, and then also volatile. And there's two main modes to it. One is sort of like an advanced user mode, and one is what we call a kiosk mode. The kiosk mode is pretty much you stick the thing in, it brings up a dialog box, you press the go button, and it does its thing without too much interaction, and then it's sort of got a green checkbox when it's done. But in the interactive mode, both for live and dead, you can do basically on-device triage, where you can view the results right then and there, from, you know, internet artifacts, you know, various different volatile data, various different, you know, browser history, images, files, and stuff like that. And then it also gives you the option to do some targeted collection. So, for example, if you only have a little bit of time and you just want to take free space or you just want to take the page file, you can do that. So it's got some, you know, some good flexibility in the way that it works. And the other piece is that basically all the data gets as it's brought off, it's encrypted. So in case something happens to the device, you're not left sort of worrying where your data is at. And then also another thing I think is pretty key about it is it doesn't require you to have FTK. So it's pretty much a standalone application, similar to MPE, in which you're not required to have FTK. It's its own standalone piece, so you can program and recover and review and analyze the data without having to without having FTK. There is a good integration where the data can be brought over, for further analysis and stuff like that. But I mean, those are some of the key things that I think I wanted to at least call out with the Triage product. They're a little bit different for the other things on the market. We got a lot of very exciting features to add to it. But for an initial release, I think all of us are real comfortable with the sort of breadth of capabilities, both on the dead box side and the live box side.
That's very cool. So you mentioned there was two different ways you can get the data. You said that just basically there's the push the button and go, and there's a more advanced feature set. So is that for example, like if you had a forensic investigator on the scene, they might engage the more robust features. But if it was just an average person on the scene with no forensic training, they could actually just put the USB stick in, press the button, and collect all the data that you've previously programmed in. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, you pretty much nailed it, right? And we've done some things where you can have different profiles. So like there's, let's just say profile one, profile two, profile three, type of thing. But yeah, for the most part, it really is, you could pre-program it to do, to which modes you want to do. Is it the push button or the more advanced mode in which you can get interactive with the data, right? It is triage. And this sort of the nature of what triage is. And interestingly enough, after spending enough time in the space, there's sort of two concepts to triage. One is the on-scene triage, right, where I go to this device, I'm going to take whatever I can get off of it because of my time or because of the particular resources that I have available to me from a human capital perspective. I need to provide a mechanism for them to get that data off in a way that you feel comfortable with. The other one being is that I already have the data. Now I just want to go ahead and quickly triage it to pull some things out of it. But from either workflow, right, it just really depends. But we've tried to make a mechanism so that depending on how the org, who wants to use it and how it's being used, you kind of have the push button and go, or you have the more sort of what I would call the traditional sort of on-device triage capability.
Very nice. So say somebody bought a license for AD Triage, how many of those USB devices could they create themselves from that single license?
So they're able to program one USB device, any USB device, and then basically if you lose it, you can just go ahead and deactivate that one. You don't have to have it, and then use a new one. Right now, the licensing just keeps it so that you can only program one USB device at a time. And the way that it works is you buy the license, you have unlimited, you can program and recover as many, sort of triages as you want. The only limitation is on the number of devices that get pre-programmed. So let's just say you have your little USB device, your Kingston USB device, you register it in the admin piece. Once it's registered, you program it, and then you would go ahead and do triage on a device, and then you recover it. And then you can just keep doing that over and over and over again. And if you want to swap out and use a different USB device or like a FireWire device that you make bootable, you can easily just swap that out. So the only licensing constraint is to the number of devices that get pre-programmed. We have another model that we've put in play for sort of large forces, I guess you could say larger entities, where they might want to give they have 1,000 people where they want to pre-program USBs on a keychain, in which they can basically buy the license and they can program up to like 10,000 licenses, and then they just pay for recovery, right? So they'll basically buy chips. So they like, oh, we've got, we're going to do 1,000 recoveries. So then they would just pay based off the recovery. That way an organization's like, well, if I've got 10,000 users out there and I want them all to have USB, they're not having to buy, like 10,000 copies of Triage, right?
Right. Cool stuff. So does that mean they have to, whenever they perform the triage, does the information get stored back to the USB stick, or can you use another piece of storage in order to push the triaging stuff onto that?
That's a good question. You have, it's got alternate device support, so you can just use, I'll give you the ultimate extreme. You can pre-program a CD to make the bootable ISO that calls to an alternate device, the USB or something else, that you can store the data to. So you can basically, you know, send your triage data to the USB and then send the image over to like a FireWire device. It's got alternate device storage. And then we also have a network capability in which you can set up like a receiver. Right. And then you can send it to the receiver. We also have network share support. So you can actually map it to a network share through UNCPath to throw the data over to UNCPath if that was something you wanted to do. So a couple different mechanisms so that you're not stuck like, oh, crap, I only have a 4 gigabyte USB. Those are all things. It's a good question. They're all things we sort of took into account, like looking at the space and sort of understanding where people were upset. Their USB device wasn't big enough, you know, what was going to happen? I want to break up my triage data from my image data. What if I want to send it across the wire? I don't want to actually have my dongle, you know, plugged into the box. I want to just be able to use cheap USBs. And because we were seeing that the failure rates on USB devices are pretty high. So if I'm like, you know, you're stuck with my USB or my device, right? You're sort of beholden to me a bit. So we wanted to provide some flexibility in being able to give people the choice to use their own USB devices and provide flexibility in the alternate storage paths relative to where the data goes.
Superb. That sounds fantastic. I'm going to try and get a hold of a copy of that and do a little review for it for the website as well. So hopefully couple of weeks we'll put it through its paces for you. And let you know what we think. But it sounds fantastic. And the fact that you can just program virtually any USB device, I think is pretty awesome.
Thank you. We thought so. We appreciate that.
Cool. Well, we've also got Lee Reber sitting on the line. He's been very, very patiently waiting. So we'll move on to the MPE Plus Mobile Phone Examiner. And it's just recently had an update to the software. And, why don't you tell us about it, Lee?
Sure. And thanks. I appreciate it. Now, I guess we'll kind of go in the beginning and talk a little bit just about where, you know, obviously Access Data had the original MPE where it was really kind of married to FTK. And, you know, you had to use FTK to complete the analysis. That was something that that Access Data really looked at and said, you know what, let's come out with kind of a version or a piece of software that obviously we want to keep that Access Data's forensic or really the container and kind of keep it a forensic utility, but then on the other hand still be utilized for, say, on scene. You know, we're just talking about triage. And that's the biggest problem that we have right now, especially in the mobile phone space, is there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of, say, examiners or people who are conducting these extractions on scene, and we're inundated with requests, right? So that it used to be just one phone we were processing. Now we have hundreds of phones that we have to get done, and we run into that time issue. So a lot of the tools out in the space currently are the quick, I call it push button as well, is that I want to extract the data and I want it now. But really the problem that I ran into in looking at these tools was, you know, are we degrading really the extraction? Are we getting away from forensics and bringing into, the hands of, say, these first responders of just data? Right, of just here, give me the contacts, SMS, the call logs, and that's all we need, right? And we're running into that problem. And so, the focus that I had, especially with Access Data and this product of MP Plus, was to bring really both sides together. A first responder who can still utilize a tool; it's extremely easy to use. But then on the other end of it, not compromise the integrity of the evidence. So keeping all of the data within this container so that someone, you know, 100 years from now, 2 years, you know, 30 minutes can go and actually open up that container in MP Plus or even FTK and look at the data just like the phone was still connected. So really a lot of things and a lot of kind of dedication, especially some of the developers of how can we bring the marriage of those together. And I really think with MP Plus, it takes into consideration the time of an examination, doing it extremely quick, but then keeping it in this, say this, the 81 container that they can then go and instead of conducting another extraction, like a lot of times people are doing, say if they want to look more into the file system. You know, granted, you might have, say, a patrol officer who just wants to have the data now, pictures, contacts, but then what happens down the road in say, a court, you know, court of law, or in this, they want to look farther. They say, hey, there's a date and time in those file systems. Well, because the extraction was done up front, we could have another examiner now go and look at the data, like I said, just like the phone was still connected, because it was extracted initially by the first responder who might not have needed that data, but then we can always go ahead and look at it. And so that's really where we've come, especially with an interface as well. It's a standalone utility so that we can conduct our extraction, a logical extraction, as well as the file system. So once you do that, it's nice, easy buttons. It's a cool interface, and you can see the data now. So I brought into about the triage end of it. We were running into problems, you know, when I was conducting a lot of the cell phone forensics. We would go and we'd do this extraction, and we would have to either take it into another utility and actually review the data, because it just wasn't offered, say, on that particular device that conducted the extraction. Well, now with MP Plus, you can conduct the extraction. I can see all the data. I can actually carve within the tool. So I can carve for phone specifics like 3GP, 3G2 files, which are video files on cell phones, as well as JPEGs, HTML, AMR files, QCP, a lot of those files that are on a cell phone. We can now carve within MP Plus for those particular files, which very it makes nice. It makes it very, very nice, because MMS right now, a lot of tools aren't extracting that MMS. And so you might have, say, for example, probation and parole or customs, some of those entities that really need to get the data off and triage it quickly, looking for pictures, images, videos, those types of items that might be embedded within a file. And a lot of tools are just grabbing the media folder and missing those files. Whereas with MP Plus, wow, I can quickly go through it, find these videos, the images right there. I can see, yep, that's the file that I was looking for. And so we can quickly go through the data instead of having to take it into another utility, FTK, to carve those items, say at the lab. So it brings in that ability for not only the first responders, but then the ability for those technicians, say lab personnel, that can really dive into the file system and find some fantastic artifacts, those HTML, you know, and then bringing that into additional reports. So kind of supplements what, say, the first responder did during the examination. So with the new version, though, we're really excited because it brings in the full physical with the iDevice support. And what that allows you to do is actually go and extract the partitions from these iDevices. And this all happens without jailbreaking the device. So once you go and you receive that, say, full physical of these iDevices and you bring it into FTK 3.3 or above, the artifact, it's tremendous. We are recovering not only the partitions, but within those partitions, the unallocated space. So in that unallocated space are, you know, obviously plist files, SQLite databases, images, some of the videos that are pushed off, that a lot of the tools that are claiming that they can get a physical are missing because that unallocated space is not extracted. So it is it's really cool, especially a lot of the corporations going to and distributing iPhones or say iPads to their employees. Obviously, if you're going to do that, it's nice having a tool that you're able to not only just receive a nice logical extraction, but a full physical so that obviously you can down the road look at this and if they make claims, obviously they say, no, that data didn't exist prior to us issuing that. So there's some really cool features with MP Plus. So I'm, as you can tell, I get kind of excited talking about it.
It's your baby though, isn't it? This.
Yeah, it's been very, very nice to, you know, to have all these ideas and have the reception of a lot of the developers as well as Access Data and to kind of making these things a reality. So it's in no way, you know, that if you've done cell phones, there's no really one tool that's going to solve it all. That's for sure, just because of all of the different variations with the devices. Access Data really, and what we wanted to do is really concentrate on a lot of the smartphones and then make it a tool for not only our first responders, but those technicians in the lab.
Superb. So MP Plus, to be honest, I think I've told you this before, that I'm not hugely into mobile phone forensics. It's an area that I'd like to get into, but I'm kept far too busy with just the computer side of stuff at the moment anyway. But for MPE Plus, you've got this hardware option, haven't you, where you've got this standalone computer device where, I mean, do you need that in order to perform the data dumps of say, like an iPad or an iPhone or anything like that? Or can you do that through your computer as well?
Yeah, what's really nice about MP Plus is there's really two form factors. You have a tablet or the mobile tablet that's about a 7-inch screen that you're able to obviously conduct all your extractions, see the data on that device. But it also comes in with the ability to just utilize your dongle, a Code Meter Access Data dongle. So you can run it on your PC. You can run it on a laptop. So really there's multiple flavors sort of to utilize. So if you didn't want the option of, say, a mobile tablet, it's the same software to run on the PC version or obviously if you're going to run it on a laptop. So you really, really can choose how you would like to utilize the software. It's not just confined to, say, a mobile unit.
Very nice. So you mentioned you took full physical acquisitions, basically, of iDevices. So I've got a couple of questions for you based on that. You probably aren't going to tell me this. The jailbreaking side of things. I know that previously people have really believed that you have to jailbreak in order to get full access to those devices. How is it that you circumvent that process?
Well, we run a training class, and we'll explain. No, no. Actually, you know, it is, everything happens in RAM. So as we go and we're going to, say, open the door to this, it occurs in RAM. So once the device is shut off, RAM's gone. Everything, instead of having an active device, it is in a state of, say, it's inactive. So not to get into our too technical how it occurs, but like I said, everything is occurring within that RAM space.
Awesome. So is that just specifically for iDevices? I know, can you do that with other types of phones as well, say for like Android devices specifically?
Yeah, what's quite nice is actually what we are currently working on is just that with the Android, and they're fantastic devices. And what's interesting about those devices in particular is how we can go and we can access and do the same thing, you know, in a general sense that we are doing with iDevices. But the problem that you run into is because of the hardware, certain devices, to put it into a particular mode that we really need to put it into, you might have to have a combination of buttons, right, for, say, one device, whereas yeah. You go to another device and it's a different set of a combination of buttons. So that's the problem that we're, you know, obviously that everyone kind of in the community is running into, is how exactly can I put it into this particular mode, exactly. Thank you very much. And so that's the problem that we're running into, not necessarily how we're going to do it, but how are we going to instruct, say, the user to utilize, you know, those keystrokes. So that's the problem. But to be honest with you, the artifacts that I find in on an Android device far exceed what I find on with an Apple device, with some very, very, very cool versioned, you know, obviously the applications, the different types of documents on there, and just how the Android lays that information out in kind of the VMs is really, really cool. And circumventing the gesture is something obviously that we're really, really kind of moving towards with I guess full speed, because that's something that people are running into. Obviously, the gesture or the lock code, the passcode that you put on an Android device is obviously pretty difficult when you run into that on the street, and you know, a lot of people are left with, well, there's nothing I can do. So we're really trying to move forward so that we can say, yes, there are some things that you can do, and give that out to the users.
That's very nice. So does that mean, I know that most Android devices currently use the AFS2 file system. Does that mean that Access Data somewhere down the line is going to support the parsing of that file system? Or I don't know if you already do support that even.
You know, that'd be fantastic, because obviously if we're going to go and take the you know, there's going to be multiple partitions on an Android. And obviously taking those into account, we're going to have to. Go and take and look into that into that file system.
Very nice. I look forward to that. Like I said, I don't know a lot about mobile phone forensics, but I know about Android because I've got my own phones that I play with quite frequently, so right. that would be fantastic to get. Going back to, you mentioned the passcode on the Android. What about the passcode on iDevices? Is this the system you use, does that bypass that, or do you still need some kind of?
No, if it's password protected, it doesn't matter. It completely bypasses that.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know some people who'd be very happy to hear that. Yeah, that's fantastic. There was one other question I had, and it's completely gone out of my mind now about it's about the iOS devices have also got block level encryption from version 4 onwards. Now, do you have any method currently of getting full physical dumps from those devices, or if you do, can you actually read them?
Yeah, we can get a full physical on the iOS 4 and above with that, but we run into the same issue that some other vendors might run into, is that we can receive the partitions, say the user partition, the decrypted user partition, all of those, and there's really two different types of encryption running on both of those on those partitions. So we can recover it and recover all the data, see the complete file system with the wonderful file names, but each file is individually encrypted. And that's the same thing that everyone's running into, obviously. And that is definitely, priority number one currently.
Fantastic. Do you think you'll find a way past it?
We get to answer that. I would love to say, you bet, but we'll wait.
All right. Cool stuff. All right. Fantastic. Now, in order to take that physical dump and analyze it, you know, after people have to download FTK version 3.3, aren't they, in order to view that?
Yeah, correct. Because of the different block sizes that are utilized by the different iOS devices, you know, obviously they can be not really in our 512. So FTK 3.3 recognizes that once we extract that image, create that DD of the iOS device, FTK 3.3 and above recognizes that and then builds the file system based on that particular block size for that image. So that's why we have to utilize FTK 3.3 and above to conduct the further analysis of the physical. And it only makes sense. That's a lot of people ask me, well, how can we not take it into MP Plus? Well, on the roadmap is actually going and taking it and maybe parsing the user data from that. We already do that with the logical, you know, being able to get and rebuild our full path and full file system. Just for the logical extraction. But I really wanted to utilize the power of FTK because that's what it's built for, right? Really, the OS and being able to parse through that that large amount of data and utilizing you know, the built-in custom carvers for plist files and SQLite databases that are currently available, and we can do that with FTK. So I wanted to keep it there. To really bring about and to recover a maximum amount of data, and not just utilizing MP Plus for that, but take it in and give it to FTK to consume.
Superb. And how many is MP Plus gonna follow the same kind of route as some of the other specialist software and stick to like the smartphone arena, or are you looking at covering as many handsets as you physically can?
No, we really want to make it a tool that's not just smartphones. There's a lot of focus that we want to have on the smartphones because of really the OS. But no, we cover some fantastic CD. We have CDMA support, which is even if the phone is not directly supported, we can extract the file system. Even if they're locked, we can then go and take also with our GSM support. Same thing with the file system support of our standard GSM, because no way would I want to get away from that, because, you know, it's not everyone has, say, a smartphone or smart devices. A lot of the people our first responders are dealing with do not either, you know, don't have the ability, and they have the cheap phones. So we really, really never want to get away from only concentrating on the smartphone, because we'd be missing 60-70% of the population. And that's really wanted to make it a well-rounded tool, not just focused on a particular subset.
Fantastic. So how many phones does it actually support now, and how many are you looking at, say, you know, how's the roadmap going?
Yep, fantastic. We have 2,500 handsets supported currently, and just with the addition of, it'll probably be quarter two, another 1,700 handsets will be brought on.
What are you hoping to, is there any more functionality you're hoping to add to this software in the future that will make examiners' lives a lot easier?
Oh yeah, actually with MP Plus, adding the ability, some bookmarking ability into it as well, and then saving when we export to 81, actually saving those bookmarks. So when you bring them in FTK, they're already populated. Adding the ability for a lot of conversions more. You know, are you familiar with their natural tab? So we're able to display, say, HTML. Within MP Plus currently, you can play 3GP and 3G2 files, so you don't have to export those out. But really having the ability to bring in, say, and to review more data, so that taking in some functionality to really review, say, SQLite databases, actually display a lot more information in the interface itself. So kind of moving to even adding more standalone ability to MP Plus, making it more of a tool that we're not only can you quickly review images, videos, and some of the audio, but now bring it in. Boy, we can get into our HTML, save those bookmarks, add a gallery view. Currently, there isn't a gallery view. You have individual pictures that you can go through. So, bringing that into MP Plus is going to be pretty cool. It is going to be paramount to having its continued, you know, staying ahead of, say, the curve.
Awesome. And it currently we're on version 4.2.1, is that right?
Correct, correct. And then we're adding in the next, which is in 2 weeks, full SIM and USIM support, which it's really cool. Well, everything's cool. But the SIM and USIM, it's going to add the ability. A lot of tools only recover really that SIM partition. And when we're talking about USIM, you know, if you're not recovering the USIM partition, you're missing extra phone books, some extra call information, some extra files that might be placed on there by certain carriers. So not only will we extract, say, 20 file IDs, but you can go into the file system showing all the multiple file IDs within the file system on that SIM card and USIM partition, and then also the ability for a deep scan. And what deep scan does is it goes through the file system looking for, say, files that aren't spelled out under GSM standards, because a lot of carriers place extra files onto that, say, to some IMEI numbers, some things that they utilize. So we'll be able to go through that and look for additional files that have been added by carriers. So a really, really robust SIM and USIM extraction that'll be a very nice addition, especially for our European market.
Very nice. So one last question then for you, Lee. How do you find the time to do all this and still do all the training you do?
Well, I have a great training group that that does a lot of the training. Currently, I'm on the Lee Road Show. I just returned from Australia doing the promotions and on training as well as MP Plus product, and I leave again tomorrow to go and do some more of this. So it's I remembered what my kids, I said hi to them today, and so but as for finding the time, I don't take too many days off or sleep too much. They always told me that sleep was overrated, so yeah. that's where we're at.
Fantastic. All right, well, thanks for that. Now we mentioned that FTK version 3.3 was required for pulling in stuff from MPE Plus, if you don't look at the physical iOS devices and whatnot. Now, we've also heard a couple of rumors floating around that FTK 4 is coming soon. Now,
yep.
Brian, if I can come back to you for just a
sure.
moment. Obviously, FTK 3, it's only been around for probably, a couple of years at the moment. What's going to be the big thing in FTK version 4 that's going to, the major changes?
Sure. It's a good question. Yeah, FTK 3 has been around for a bit now. So we're typically at about a 14-month, we try to stick to major version releases around the two-year mark, or less than that. But we haven't been talking about it as much. After being part of FTK 2 and talking about major version releases, I'll reserve talking about them releases well in advance. I would say that that's something I have a little sensitivity to. So, given that it took a number of years to get the FTK 2 out after its initial fanfare. But with FTK 4, we do have some pretty exciting things on tap. It is slated for Q2 this year. So very much in the near term. It's obviously part of, the existing licenses. We don't do upgrades. It's all covered as part of maintenance, which, gets asked about a lot. But I think some of the key things, without getting into too much detail, the biggest one, which there's been some talk about, which we've sort of actively been talking about, is it will have a new database support. It will support Postgres, will become the new default database that FTK ships with.
Right.
So there's been quite a bit of effort going in to be able to provide that. We'll still continue to support Oracle and any of the existing customers out of Oracle, and support migrations and backups and recovery and various different iterations that are there. But the new database will be a Postgres, both 32-bit and 64-bit. And, we've been spending a bunch of time making sure that the performance and the numbers around processing time and the user experience are in line. And it's definitely taken a bit of doing. But Postgres is going to be the new database. It gives us a lot of flexibility depending on what happens with, Oracle and stuff like that. But as part of the effort of moving to the new database, what's really exciting is actually we redid the database layer. We redesigned the database layer, and we've introduced a new set of concepts into the database layer that is, you could call it a database cache of sorts. But it allows us, one of the big challenges is as the data sets have gotten bigger and bigger, it's required more horsepower to actually view the results, which, where people are like, oh, well, you need X amount of RAM for X number of, you know, if you're viewing 5 million files, you know, 5 million items, you should probably have, you know, 16, 18 gigs of RAM, whatever it might be, and really fast I.O. or put on an SSD drive. So we spent quite a bit of time developing a new method in which examiners can leverage their investments in hardware, but also deal with the sort of rapidly growing data set size. And we view everything in the concept of an item. And, you know, the more items, the more sort of more horsepower that you need, especially as, you know, just process anything and you're, you know, with a 500,000 items. So what this new layer, this new caching layer allows us to do is we're finding results where, you know, we're doing lots of tests with 20 million, 70 million, and 500 million items. And, you know, putting those on, you know, doing, you know, taking a couple million items on a 7200 RPM drive with 4 gigs of RAM and being able to provide reasonable performance and good performance from a user experience when looking at the data. So I think one of the big things is basically, I guess you would say, more efficient, dramatically more efficient use of resources to offset the growing data size, and, you know, by providing sort of a, you know, more positive user experience as a result. So there's been quite a bit there, and I think we're going to do some pretty cool videos talking, you know, showing what this new layer is able to do. So that's on the database side. There's definitely more details, but, you know, that's the gist of it. And then in there will be we'll have some new remote acquisition capabilities. You know, I think it was in the early versions of SDK3. We call it RDMS, which was the remote device mounting services, where a person can just with FTK push out a self-dissolving agent and then do full disk acquisition, the device, volume, RAM, or mount that data so that you could use any tools that you want or FTK to analyze a live system. So we're going to do some this new version is going to come out with new operating system support with Linux and Solaris and Macintosh. Let's see, what are some other, I think, things worthwhile talking about? Being able to choose where your database goes. One of the challenges that we had was with the databases, if you start pulling files out from underneath the database, the database gets very upset. Oracle gets very upset. So now we've done our best to provide a mechanism when you go to create your case, you can put your databases in their own individual device. So for those folks that do sort of more criminal work that are very concerned about contamination, you can now basically take your case folder and your database and put it on its own physical device. Fantastic. So that you could have a different physical device per case.
That's fantastic. That'll make my life a lot easier.
I mean, we've been in the works for a while. I mean, it comes with a warning that says if you remove this device underneath it and you don't detach the database, it's going to get unhappy. But, you know, we originally did it and it was just like, oh my gosh, you know, if you pull this thing out from underneath the database, it gets upset. So we provided that. And then we've done some other things with export to make it faster and provide better logging. And then also we've done some things where, you know, we continue in our, you know, a lot of our goal is to, you know, to utilize resources efficiently as possible. So we have spent some time working on mechanisms to increase file system performance for both local and network storage. So we've been able to change the megabits. We've been able to dramatically increase the rate at which data can be read from a megabits per second perspective. I mean, obviously the underlying I/O fabric and the bandwidth there, but there was more that we needed to do to optimize the protocols in which we read data. So we've done that. We've gotten, you know, we brought down CPU utilization, the CPU overhead, and we really increased the megabits per second somewhere almost around 400 megabits with the right I/O fabric. So that will, you know, result in some faster performance. And then we just got HP just loaned us a 128 core single board single board box that's got 128 cores with 2 terabytes of RAM. I thought I would just throw that out there. So we just started testing on that. It's the picture is really interesting. So we did some there, and then we've got a couple of these Dell 48 core Opteron boxes. Cool. So we've been doing lots of optimization, doing multi-node 48 core clusters, and then just making sure that we're efficiently utilizing as these boxes, as more cores and more RAM keep getting put into these devices. So those are just some of the key highlights of FTK4. There's obviously more stuff, but if I was going to touch on a couple things, I thought it was worthwhile talking about.
Very cool. I know that you've also got your lab software as well. Is there any movement towards integrating some of that functionality with future versions of a Forensic Toolkit?
You mean from a collaborative perspective?
Yes.
Yeah, so we did. So not outright, not right now. We do have the FTK Pro version, which has got a much lower price point and a slightly different set of functionality that allows three user collaboration. So right now it's sort of that's where it's at. We've provided a lower cost footprint to be able to support the collaboration, and but we haven't necessarily moved that into FTK. Right now with FTK, we just continue to optimize the platform. You still can do the distributed processing with up to 4 nodes. And, the collaboration piece, which seems to be a slightly different workflow and different problem than, a lot of what is the traditional investigative process. Yeah. We've seen a fair amount of, I think it was, what's the best way to position? I think that the way that people are working is starting to evolve. I mean, obviously, the traditional one man, one machine, one case look at it all is a very much a proven methodology, but also one that is posing its own unique sets of challenges relative to the data set problem, right?
Yep.
It's just very difficult for an examiner to do linear review of millions of items. I think that the lab and the pro are there to help sort of organizations that are looking to sort of collaborate and possibly streamline their review process with multiple examiners, say, hey, this guy takes email, one guy does graphics, and one guy's the carving guy, and sort of, break those things up and support that. But, that's what we've done right now is we have that pro product.
Fantastic. So are you going to be talking much about FTK4, MPA Plus and AD Triage at your upcoming conference as well, then?
Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, we're excited for our first annual AD user conference. It's very much it's very much focused on being a user event, right? So everything is very specific to Access Data products. We've got some really great speakers, and we're really excited about that. But yeah, all the different products are going to get covered. We're going to do hands-on labs and best practices and tips and tricks, and we're going to have, people that help make the software. Most of the training staff is there, and we're really hoping that'll be a nice interactive environment in which people can feel comfortable and exchange best practices relative to these different processes. So we're very much our development path is really driven by the needs of the market and what we see out there and what we hear, like we did with making Triage not tied to FTK and MPE being able to be standalone and all that type of stuff. We're going to have our advisory board meeting as well, where we meet with various different key customers to sort of map out what we're looking at. But yes, all of these products are going to get plenty of attention along with our CERT product, which is the Cyber Intelligence Response Technology. Yep. Which we'll have a big release of that coming out. And we'll also be releasing a new, our web-based review platform that is bringing together what I would call, we obviously have with the Summation merger, a lot of experience in the litigation support arena, because Summation's been around for over 20 years, and we've been around for 20 years, and merging together what is our new interface in which people can interact with data. that supports both, I would say, the legal process, but also the investigative process. So we've been in the working on that for quite some time, and we'll be going through that quite a bit and having a number of sessions, getting people used to what that experience looked like. Because obviously, the step between computer forensics and the litigation process are you know rapidly converging, you know, at a breakneck speed. So we're obviously wanting to do what we can to help facilitate that process, streamline it, and then enable all of our users across that spectrum to be well positioned to, you know, provide a lot of value to their organizations.
Fantastic. So the conference, when is it? Where is it?
So the exact date, it's in Las Vegas. It is the week of May 16th. So 16th through the 18th. And there's plenty of information on our website. It's called, we call it ADUC, the ADUC, Access Data User Conference. And like I said, there's over 30, I think we're at 40 different workshops. And very much a little bit different than the traditional sort of show up presentation. We do have some of those are on our current topics, but we'll have lots of labs with lots of hands-on with key individuals within the Access Data organization and our partners. Really getting into the weeds on using these products.
Fantastic. And both you guys going to be there for that conference?
Yes.
Yes, cool. I will be there with bells on, I believe.
Cool. That's fantastic. If people want to sign up and attend the conference, then go to the Access Data website there and find out all about it.
Absolutely.
Right. Is there anything else you guys want to discuss or bring up?
Lee?
No, I think, I appreciate you you having us on here to go over some of the products.
No problem.
I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. Have enjoyed the opportunity to sort of discuss some of the things that we've got going on. It's been exciting times at Access Data. It's been really exciting working with Lee. He's just really injected some, you know, incredible direction into our mobile phone platform, which is obviously seeing some great uptake and, you know, really the adoption. And we've got a lot of great plans for that platform, along with the triage platform and also with the FTK platform as well. So appreciate it. I'll possibly be seeing you in Austin for the SANS event.
Oh, you're going to be there again this year?
There's a very good chance.
Awesome. I know I'm going to be there for sure this time again. So that'll
fantastic.
Be it. I really, really enjoyed the last one. So hopefully
yeah,
I'll enjoy
SANS
this one just as much.
Yep. SANS has done a fantastic job putting together that event.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you very much, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure. I don't think Brian participates much in social media from what I've been able to tell, but I know that that Lee's available to follow on stuff like Twitter. Have you got do you want to share your handle, Lee?
Yeah, mine is Celdet, CLLDET, and also there's another one, MFI Training as well, that just kind of covers some of the MFI stuff, and so those are the two that I have.
Cool stuff. And we obviously didn't do too bad the first time we had you on the show, because you were quite happy to come back the second time as well. So.
Exactly. Anytime.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure having you guys on, and hopefully we'll get you back on another time. Just to let people know that the Forensic Forecast Awards are going to be held as part of the SANS Forensic Summit this year in Austin, Texas. So get your nominations in. You have until the end of May 1st to get your nominations in. Voting will open a few days later, and voting will run up pretty much until the conference starts. So please get involved there. Also check out Forensic Forecast Facebook page, facebook.com/forensicforecast. And join us next time, and take care. Bye for now. This podcast is brought to you in part by Disk Labs, offering a range of services such as forensic data recovery, digital forensics, and certified data erasure. Find out more at disklabs.com.